Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Harry.
Thank you so much for coming.
大家早上好，很感谢大家能够今天过来听讲座。
Okay, today I'm going to be speaking about consciousness East and West. I'm very excited about this topic, so I'm very happy to be here with everyone and thankful for the center for making this possible.
今天呢，我要讲一下东西方关于意识这一个话题啊。我对这个话题非常感兴趣，所以非常激动，非常感恩禅中心能够让我来讲这个讲座。
So consciousness may be a very complicated topic, but I picked it for a simple reason. It is the basis for how we know ourselves. It's the center of our suffering and our liberation.
意识呢是一个非常复杂的话题啊。我选这个话题的原因却很简单，因为这是我们能够认识自己的一个基础，它是我们所有的痛苦和解放的一个中心话题。
I'm going to talk about how we recognize consciousness a little bit, about what it is and perhaps what it isn't, how it's been approached from a psychological point of view,and also from Western neuroscience, and what its view is and importance in Buddha Dharma. And I will try to define consciousness, and I will also do my best not to define it, because it's a very tricky entity. And finally, I'll talk about how all of this information can be useful in actual practice.And I'm going to speak about a particular passage from the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment.
今天呢，我的话题，我讲座主要会讲到以下几点。首先呢，我会讲到我们如何能够认识意识这个主题。通常呢，从西方来讲是如何从精神科学和神经科学来认识它，来了解它。然后会讲到意识在佛教当中它的重要性。然后我会试图我会试图能够对意识下一个定义，然后我也会用我最好的方法能够试图又不让这个定义啊这个定义凝固在我们的脑子里，作为一个只是一个框架来束缚我们。最后呢，我会讲一下在我们的日常修行当中，实际修行当中，今天我们所学到这些信息能够怎样的帮助我们。最后我会引用一段来自于圆觉经的经文。
When you start studying Buddha Dharma, when you start practicing, very quickly you encounter some of the Buddha's basic teachings, like the four foundations of mindfulness, which asks us to pay attention to body, feeling, mind, and objects of mind. And of course,You can't help but confronting the five skandhas. What the Buddha said comprises a human being, body and mind, divided into form, sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness.
当我们开始学习佛教的时候呢，我们很快就会接触到正念的四个基础内容。这些呢是佛陀给我们指出，就是我们在修行的过程当中可以特别注意的，比如说我们的身体，我们的身体，我们的感觉，我们的心，还有我们心的对象。很快呢，你就会你如果在修行的过程中，很快你就会不得不面对一些问题，比如说我们到底是由什么组成的，我们到底是什么，还有五蕴到底是什么。
Seeing through the five skandhas, understanding their nature, understanding the emptiness, which of course is what Avalokiteshvara does in the Heart Sutra, this is of great, great importance to us, understanding this emptiness, the nature of these five skandhas.
特别讲到五蕴的时候呢，我们也知道心经对五蕴有所描述，特别是对五蕴的空性有所描述。那这个是对于我们来说是非常很难理解真正空性讲什么，并且能够正确的认识到空性的意义。
So perceiving the first four skandhas is relatively easy. Form. Well, that's what we see, hear, touch, taste, think about. It's right in front of us. It's not so difficult to perceive. The same thing with sensations. We know we are feeling things. We know we have emotions. We perceive our feelings. We put them in a framework, a conceptual framework. We do this all the time. And then there is volition. We act on what we perceive and feel and see, so that we have desires to do one thing or another. This is not so far removed from us. But when you come to the subject or the skanda of consciousness, how are we going to perceive that?
所以五蕴呢，我们知道是由在心经当中讲到是色、受、想、行、识 组成的。那么前四蕴呢，相对来说都是比较好理解的。比如说色，色是我们知道有形状，是一个我们看得到、摸得到、闻得到一样东西，我们很容易理解色是什么。受呢，是一种感受。我们是怎么感觉，我们看东西会产生什么感觉，这种受蕴也是比较容易理解。然后最后行运呢是一种趋势，比如说我们经常会喜欢做什么东西，或者我们经常会采取什么行动，最后形成了行运。所以色受想行这四运都是比较容易理解的，但是到最后识运意识类就似乎比较抽象一点。
So the quest to perceive consciousness, at least in the beginning, is pretty simple and straightforward. If I've never seen a pen before, and somebody tells me, well, it's this object, it's long, it's about 3-4 inches, you can put it in your hand, and you can write with it, and it looks in such and such a way, I can say, oh, that's a pen. So it would be nice if I could do that with consciousness.
对于什么是识蕴，有些人可能以为是比较容易理解，比如说如果我从来不知道什么是叫做圆珠笔，然后有人就跟我描述了圆珠笔是一个固体，然后它有多长，它能够被你捏在手上是什么样子的，然后你很快就看到，哦，那我手边这个就叫圆珠笔。
What does consciousness look like or feel like for that matter?Does it have a shape or a color? Can I put it in a box somewhere and come back to it another time? If I don't have enough consciousness, can I get some more consciousness somewhere? How does it actually work?
但是意识到底是什么东西呢？它有形状、有颜色吗？是我可以把它储藏起来吗？我可以要更多的吗？是可以量化吗？
And what would I do with this definition of consciousness if I had it? And I know people may be very interested in exactly how I'm going to approach it. But one of the things that we really have to be careful of in Buddha Dharma is reifying things, taking things that are moving very quickly, not definable, and trying to put them in some form that we think is graspable.
但是如果我有一个当然我没有，但是如果我有对意识的定义的话，我又怎么能够帮助我呢？我用有这个意识的定义有什么用呢？特别是对于佛教徒，我们会对定义一样东西会非常谨慎，因为我们经常会对经常变化着东西而不是试图去定义它。
The problem is simply or profoundly is how we view the worldOur place in it, how we react to it, what's happening to us in a given moment, and what should we be doing? This is really the important question, and basic to Buddha Dharma is that when we go about our lives, unless we're really practicing this or some form of self-investigation, we're often subject to unhappiness. We're really not...at peace with ourselves and the world.
问题，主要的问题可以用很简单但又很深奥的一个方法来说，就是说我们是如何来看待这个世界，我们是如何在这个世界中定位我们自己，并且我们如何跟我们自己进行互动，在每一分钟是如何与自己进行互动的。所以佛教来说呢，从佛教角度来说，我们如果除非你是修行者，如果你不是修行者的话，你一般都是会处于一种不是非常快乐的一种状态。
That's why Master Deng Shan, in describing the practice and what should, one should regard, would often say just this, simply just this, everything, what you're experiencing, how you're living. Master Gu Tai,often to many questions would simply raise his finger in the air and that would be his answer.
所以呢，由于比较难以描述，所以洞山良初禅师会就是说就是这样，就是说去真实的体验每一分钟，就是去体验而已。而另一位禅师会把他的手指指向天空，而仅此而已。
If you ask the ordinary man or woman on the street, what is consciousness? What's its importance to you? Chances are, people wouldn't have much of an answer. Or ordinary people really don't think much about thinking.
如果你到大街上去问任何一个人，意识是什么？很大程度他们可能会说，啊，我们从来没有想过这个问题。
So people would say, well, yeah, I'm conscious, I'm making conscious decisions, I'm aware of the world, but generally I'm going about my business. And, consciousness, that's something that's for psychologists, that's for neuroscientists, it's a very esoteric topic, it really doesn't have anything to do with me.
所以大部分人会说啊，我当然知道我是有意识的，我知道啊，我是有直觉的，但是，似乎我每天过我的生活，这个概念对我来说没有什么用。然后那好像是一个心理学或神经科学研究的一个话题。
Now, if you ask someone about the unconscious, well, then you'd get perhaps more of a response, a popular response, and people would say, oh, well, yeah, that's the realm of That's dreams, that's all about dreams, that's about mental illness, and it's the basis of a lot of horror movies.
但是如果你问到什么叫潜意识呢，然后你可能会得到更多一些答案，比如有人会说，哦，那是梦境啊，还有那是恐怖电影的一个经常涉及的主题啊。
So in Freud's analytic theory, The unconscious mind is a reservoir of feelings, thoughts, urges, and memories that lie outside our conscious awareness. Most of the contents of the unconscious are considered unacceptable, unpleasant, and are filled with pain, anxiety, or conflict. And according to Freud, the unconscious continues to influence our behavior and our experience even though we are unaware of these underlying influences.
所以，弗洛里德，根据弗洛里德的，心理学理论呢，他会认为这种潜意识呢，主要是像一个我们各种各样想法呀、感受啊，还有各种冲动啊、记忆的一个很深的一个储藏室。然后一般人呢是不会意识到这样一个潜意识的存在，而且这些潜意识的内容大部分是不让人令人不愉快的一些记忆，比如说痛苦的记忆啊、焦虑的记忆啊、冲动的记忆啊，但是呢，根据弗洛伊德的理论，这些潜意识呢又会不断的影响着我们平常的行为啊或者经验，虽然我们可能没有意识到这些潜意识对我们所起的作用。
For Freud, the conscious mind includes everything that we are aware of. This is the aspect of our mental processing that we can think and talk about rationally. A part of this includes our memory, which is not always a part of consciousness, according to Freud, but can be retrieved at any time, unless you're getting on in years, and brought into our awareness. And Freud called this aspect of conscious memory the preconscious. And the preconscious is ordinary memory, and you know, which we can possibly retrieve.
所以，根据弗洛伊德理论呢，意识包括了所有我们能够觉察到的东西。这个是我们的在精神层面，在心理层面一个接收信息、处理信息、理性的处理信息的一个过程。这一部分也包括了我们所有的记忆，包括那些好像平时不在意识层面，但是当你需要去用它或者提取它的时候，它可以很容易被你重新带进意识层面的这样一种记忆。然后弗洛伊德称这种记忆为意识之前的记忆。
Note that for Freud, the unconscious, these unseen workings of the mind, are more of interest than consciousness itself. Remember, he's mostly interested in pathology, mental illness, and finding out what is wrong rather than understanding what is right.
对于弗洛伊德来说呢，这种潜意识或者意识之前的意识对他来说是他更为关注或者更感兴趣的，因为他的大家都知道他的任务主要是治疗心理疾病，所以他认为很多问题出在于潜意识当中。
And just a little disclaimer, when I speak about psychology in this talk, I'm speaking in very general terms, not for psychologists. Much of what I'm saying about Freud, there are obviously nuances and other points, other ways of looking at it. I'm not really in any way, shape or form trying to trash Freud.
当然我在谈到弗洛伊德理论的时候，我只是非常泛泛而谈。弗洛伊德理论当然有很他自己的一些比较细节的地方，有可能我没有完全涉及到。
Nonetheless, in his studies in hysteria, Freud wrote, "When I promised my patients help or improvement by means of a cathartic treatment, I have often been faced by this objection." The patient would say, "Why, you tell me yourself that my illness is probably connected with my circumstances." And the events of my life. You cannot alter these in any way. How do you propose to help me then? And I have been able to make this reply. That's Freud speaking. No doubt fate would find it easier than I do to relieve you of your illness. But you will be able to convince yourself that much will be gained if we succeed in transforming your hysterical misery into common unhappiness.With a mental life that has been restored to health, you will be better armed against that unhappiness.
所以在弗洛伊德的歇斯底里理论研究当中，他写道，我经常对我的病人做出这样的承诺，说，做出一些承诺，然后在治疗过程中，我经常会被问到这样一个问题，病人会说，既然你告诉我我的这个精神疾病是跟我的环境和过去发生在我生活中的一些事情密切相关的，但是你又不能改变这些已经发生的事情，也不能改变我所处的环境，那么你又如何能够帮助我呢？然后当我被问到这样的问题的时候呢，我当然说弗洛伊德他就会做出这样的回答，他说的确如果命运来做你的治疗医师的话，命运可能比我更容易治疗你，因为它可以改变你所处的环境，或者能够发生在你生活中的事件。但是呢，我的帮助在于你能够让你自己相信，如果我们能够成功的通过治疗呢，把你这种歇斯底里的痛苦呢，转化成一般人所谈到的一般的不快乐的话，那么就会有所疗效。
So for Freud, it seems that the inside world, as well as the outside world, they're very distinct from one another, from one's normal interactions with the world. So the best you can do is be unhappy, but at least not neurotically miserable. And once again, to be fair to Freud, he's talking about people who have pronounced mental problems and not, in quotes, well-adjusted people.But even for the well-adjusted, the unconscious is barely accessible, and it's a bubbling cauldron of anxiety.
所以，对于弗洛伊德来说，他认为，人的外在、内在世界、外在世界，以及通常在人的意识当中所感知到的与外界进行接触的这样一个世界都是不一样的。所以对于歇斯底里的病人来说，最好的方式就是把这种歇斯底里的痛苦转化成一般人所经历的不开心。所以当然他主要是针对一些患有精神疾病的病人而言的，而不是对于一些对于一般人比较就是没有什么精神疾病比较正常的人而言。但是即便是对于正常的人而言呢，潜意识也始终是无法接触到的一团焦虑之情。
Now for Carl Jung, who was at one point Freud's disciple, there's a much broader, more all-encompassing view of consciousness and unconsciousness. So Jung wrote,He's speaking about unconsciousness, really. Everything of which I know, but of which I am at the moment thinking, everything of which I was once conscious, but have not forgotten, everything perceived by the senses, but not noted to my conscious mind, everything which involuntarily and without paying attention to it, I will feel, think, remember, and want to do. All the future things that are taking shape in me and will sometime come to consciousness,All this is the content of the unconscious.
弗洛伊德弟子荣格，另一位非常著名的心理学家讲到，他呢有一个对于比起弗洛伊德而言，他有更为全面的、深刻的对于意识和潜意识的一个了解。他讲到，在他著作中，他讲到，所有我知道的。所有我知道的，我能够觉察到的东西，正是我在当时所想的东西。所有我能够意识到的东西，都是已经到我意识层面，并且我还没有忘记的东西。所有能够被我的感官所感知到的，但是呢，又没有标注说，哦，这是我的感知的，是我的感知层面在感知的东西。还有所有不自觉的，我都没有有任何特别注意它，但它已经进入到我意识层面的我的感觉、我的想东西和我记住东西，还有所有的在将来将会进入到我意识层面，但是已经进入进来的所有的这一些东西都是潜意识里的内容。
So once again, the Jungian approach is broader and more comprehensive when it comes to a view of consciousness and the unconscious. And once again, speaking in very broad strokes, Jungian therapy aims more at personal development, what happens later in life. Freudian therapy is often aimed at beginning life of sexual and death-oriented kinds of obsessions. And...is more narrowly focused than what Jung is actually has been trying to do.
所以荣格的治疗理论呢更关注于人后期的人格发展，而比起弗洛伊德而言，弗洛伊德的治疗主要是关注在早期的一些人早期的一些记忆，包括一些生死啊还有性的记忆。
Okay, and also it's important to note that there are many other kinds of psychological approaches to mental illness, mental wellness. There's behavioral therapy, cognitive therapy, and there's a whole positive movement in psychotherapy devoted to achieving happiness rather than relieving unhappiness. So it's important to note that I don't want to...pigeonhole the entire discipline of psychotherapy.
当然呢，这里也值得一提的是，除了刚刚我们提到的弗洛伊德和荣格的精神治疗理论以外，还有其他各种各样的精神学的治疗理论。而且我想提到是，除了现代的发展，精神学的发展，除了关注如何能让人们减轻这种痛苦啊，不快乐的这种 这种病状呢以外，他们也开始关注如何让人们变得快乐，关注在如何取得快乐这一层面上。
Okay, consciousness and unconsciousness in Buddha Dharma, in Chan, what is that? Well, rather than defining, rather than telling, let's try showing. So if everybody could look at your right or your left hand, whichever you're most comfortable with. If you look at the back of your hand, right, you will note, you can see a shape, form, color. You can see the pores on your hand, perhaps some hairs. You can see the wrinkles in your knuckles. This is eye consciousness.
Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. 刚我们讲的是精神学理论上关于意识和潜意识的内容。那么回到我们的禅，回到佛教，在佛教和禅上我们又是如何理解的呢？当然我们试图不要去定义它，因为这会局限我们，所以我们不如来做一个实验。我们看看我们此刻是如何感受的。比如说大家看一下自己的左手和右手，然后看一下自己的手背，伸出自己的手背看一下。你会看到形状，你会看到颜色，你会看到自己是否手上有皱纹啊，有毛孔啊，还有你的各个关节呀。
Okay, so that's, you know what you're seeing. You are visually aware.Now, that's, so the next thing, can you hear your hand? Well, if you can snap your fingers or clap like this. If you're a really, really great practitioner, you can hear the sound of one hand clapping. But there is a way of once again, becoming aware of something very ordinary, something at hand, no pun intended, and you can sense...The ear consciousness.
所以刚刚我们说到的都是你眼睛看到的，所以这是一种视觉的意识。那么你能够听到你的手吗？有没有听觉方面的意识？如果你可以比如说用手指打这个纸条做出一点声音的话，那么你也能够听到这个声音。
Okay, so now I guess in a lecture like this, people wouldn't be all that comfortable with tasting their hand, but... But you could. Many times you might have hit your hand with a hammer or something and put your finger in your mouth. So your hand has a taste, right? There is a way of sensing the hand with taste sensation.
当然了，现在大家可能不想尝一下自己的手是什么味道的，但是理论上你是可以的。比如说你要是不小心榔头砸到你的手的时候，你可能会把你的手放到你的嘴里，所以说你也是可以尝到你的手的，知道你手的什么味道，是一种味觉意识。
Okay, same deal with smelling. I guess people probably don't feel like smelling their hands, but if you would note obviously, if you were cutting garlic, that wouldn't necessarily be your hand, but the garlic that you were cutting. And you probably can't distinguish between the smell of your left hand, the smell of your right hand, or your elbow. But once again, your hand could be accessed through smelling consciousness.
还有你的手也是可以被闻到的。比如说你可能现在没有什么味道，但是如果你在切蒜的时候，当然那是蒜的味道，但是由于你在切它，所以你的手上也有了蒜的味道，所以你也可以闻到你的手，所以这是一种嗅觉意识。
Okay, now body, so you can touch your one hand with the other hand, right? And when you touch your other hand, now you're getting also information. We're talking about your same hand. You haven't switched hands during this little demo. You've got a left hand and a right hand. Same hand, you can touch it, but now you're getting a different kind of information about it.
当然你可以用你的另一只手去触摸这只手，所以有一种触觉意识。
Okay, and now if you close your eyes and you try to sense your hand,Well, you can do that also. You can have a sense of your hand. Now, you probably can't, I don't know if anyone can, sense the pores on your hand. You can't sense with your eyes closed the color or the hairs on your hand, and you can sense where your knuckles are, but probably not the wrinkles in your knuckles, and you can probably sense where the nails of your fingers are, but you probably can't really experience the hardness of the nail.
当然了，如果把你的眼睛闭上，你其实也可以感觉到你的手，当然你可能不一定能够感觉到它的颜色、形状、毛发，但是你可能可以感觉到手上的关节，你可以感觉到有指甲，但你可能感觉不到指甲有多硬。
And furthermore, so that was another way of experiencing the hand. Also, if you look at your hand and you can imagine yourself using this hand to play piano or to chop vegetables or to wave at someone. And thinking back, you may think of a time when perhaps you hurt your hand or a significant time when you waved goodbye to someone when they were leaving on a trip, but that was your hand that you were using. So there are images, experiences associated with the hand in your mind and memory.
另外一种方式去感知你的手，另外一个方式是当你看着你的手的时候，你可能会有很多图像或者影像浮现到你的意识层面，你可能会得想这只手可以用来弹钢琴啊，可以出去进行运动啊，然后你可能还会勾起你一些曾经的回忆，你可能会想到有一次你的手受伤啊，或者你曾经用这个手向某人挥泪告别呀之类的。
So in all of these exercises, we went through the six kinds of sense consciousness all about our hand. Well, how many hands do we have? There's a hand that we can look at. There's a hand that we can feel, taste, touch, smell. There's a hand that we can think about. All this information is quite different, right? Same hand, though. And in all of these exercises, there was a sense, an awareness, the extent that we're all paying attention, of all of these transpiring, of not necessarily dwelling and accepting the sense consciousness just as it was, but just of recording it, in a sense. Recording what goes on, of being aware. And this starts to go into the deeper aspects of consciousness, which we will get to in a moment. You know, we've heard some lectures here about Yogacara, about the seventh and eighth consciousness. But when we start dealing with this awareness in and of itself, and also, very importantly, this is my hand. It's not your hand. Your hand is your hand, not someone else's, not the person sitting next to you. When you think about that, then that starts to point to the I consciousness, the seventh consciousness, the way that we look at the world and we look at it only from our perspective.
所以我们刚刚做的实验都是涉及到各种各样六感官所引发的各种意识。如果你能够跟我一起做实验的话，你会觉察到这些意识的存在，并且就像是在录影放映一样。当然这涉及到更深层面的意识，待会儿我们会详细谈，主要是唯识学讲到的第七意识和第八意识。更重要的是，当我们在做这个手的实验的时候，我们知道，我们看到这是我们的，这是我自己的手，而不是你的手，不是别人的手。所以这里涉及到一个我的概念，这是第七意识上讲到的。所以这又从更深面的角度来讲，涉及到我们看这个世界都是从我自己这个角度出发的。
Let's go back to the roots of beginning of the talk. We're investigating consciousness. We were talking about the Western view, and we're really talking about trying to learn how the mind works, but primarily we're trying to heal the mind. We're trying to heal a troubled mind so we can deal with suffering. So one question that often comes up is Buddhism, Chan, is it therapy? Why and how we assess something is directly associated with a problem that we're addressing. And we want to look at this more deeply in terms of Chan. So one of Shifu's disciples, John Crook, was once in Japan, and he was speaking to a Zen master, and he asked this master, he said, the monks in your sangha, do any of them need psychotherapy? And he's, of course, referring to kind of Freudian, Jungian psychotherapy. And the Zen master said, every one of them needs psychotherapy. But the Zen master added, he said, but in Zen, in Chan, it's total therapy.
所以让我回到我们最初的想要探究的问题的本源，就是从西方一个西方人的角度来说，我们想知道心是怎么运作的，我们想知道如何能够治疗心理的疾病或者治疗一些痛苦的问题根源。所以对于佛教来说或者禅来说，第一个问题大家会问的就是说，佛教和禅是不是一种心理治疗？然后，要解决这个问题呢，让我想到师父的一个法子啊、，John Crook 英国人，他曾经在日本的时候呢，问过一个日本的禅师，他问这个日本禅师，他说，你的徒弟是不是也会需要心理治疗呢？他这一讲的精神治疗是指西方，比如说像弗洛伊德、荣格之类的心理治疗，但是呢，这个日本禅师呢，立刻跟回答说，我所有的弟子每个人都需要。但是他进一步提到，他说禅是一种全面的治疗。
So we have to be careful especially with dealing with Chan to understand that unconscious, conscious, everything is in the purview, everything is important, how we experience the world. As a matter of fact, I remember once Sherpa was asked a question about the unconscious and he said, I don't believe in it. He said, perhaps there are thoughts that you don't think as often as other thoughts, but he was looking at the mind as a totality. And it's also important when we talk about Buddhism and therapy, have to walk a very careful line because we are trying to look at the world as it is. And when we say there's something wrong with something, we're often talking about things outside us, that the world is not working properly, or even inside of us, that our mind is not working properly, when the issue is really how we're perceiving these things, the judgments we're making, this determination, when we think there's something wrong, is it really something wrong, or is it the way that we're viewing what we're viewing?
刚刚我觉得那个日本禅师的回答应该翻成整体治疗更好，就是说禅是一种整体治疗。有人也问到，也曾经问到过师父这样一个问题，就是说问师父是如何看待潜意识的。师父说我不相信潜意识，因为他师父说我不相信有这种他是认为师父认为所有都是一个整体，你的意识层面是有能够接触到这样的念头，可能有时候你没有感觉到而已。但是从禅的角度来说，所有的潜意识或者意识都是被作为整体来看待的。比如说有时候我们会认为这个世界出了问题，或者有些人有些事情出了问题，但到底是这些事情出了问题呢，还是你自己的看法有问题？
There's no getting around nonetheless when we start to talk about consciousness that it's a confusing topic simply because of the nomenclature that we're working with, because people talk about consciousness, they talk about awareness, mindfulness in the sense of beginner's mind, deluded mind, true mind. Many of these terms are thrown around and they can be somewhat confusing. There's also a Buddha Dharma teacher, Gil Fronsdale, was talking about awareness and said flatly, I don't know what it is, but the important thing is that it can be observed.
当我们在讲到意识的时候，的确是一个非常令人困惑的一个话题，因为它会有不同的词来形容它，比如说有意识啊，有觉察力啊，有正念啊，有妄心啊，有真心啊，各种各样的词来形容它，所以比较让人感到困惑。 但是我们所讲都是总体而言都是能够被觉察到的。
It's very important then that we not get off track and try to pin down a particular definition, a particular view, because it will often cause more problems than it solves. But it is important that the mind can know itself. We can sit down and observe the way that the mind works, and consciousness is involved in all of this. And when we start to look at it, when we talk about the five skandhas, when we talk about form, sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness, we see that they're all very, very connected. And of course it says in the sutras and commentaries that to see through any one of these things, to break away from a particular way of viewing and grasping these things is to break away from all of them.
当然了，最重要的是我们不要试图去下定义，因为下定义的话可能会造成更多的问题，而不能解决什么。所以，对于接触意识来讲，最重要的就是说，理解这个概念来讲，最重要就是你能够静静地坐下，并且能够观察到自己心念的起伏，能够知道你的心是怎么运作的，能够这样进而的话，你可以理解到这些都是你能感知到的，是你的意识，然后你会进一步的去能够理解什么是五蕴，因为五蕴每个元素都是相互作用、相互联系的。你如果你要能够理解一个元素的话，你必须能够打破其他元素，它们是相互连接的。
There is in Chan and Buddhism, of course, the very important notion that our suffering can be understood, it can be transcended, that we don't have to get attached in it. And we talk about nirvana, enlightenment, we talk about seeing the nature. So there is a very different goal and understanding, a fundamentally different understanding in Chan than you might encounter in regular everyday psychotherapy. And in this, with someone who has seen the nature, then they have a very clear view of everything that is transpiring in their world. They're not making the distinctions that ordinary people will do, and they're not getting caught in the same traps. Now, this is, of course, something that a serious practitioner takes seriously. But where we are at any point, it's very important to understand that no matter how complex these processes seem and however we seem to be suffering, we can really observe how the mind works.
当然在佛教当中呢，我们也强调用试图去用观念去理解这个心是怎么运作的，有些东西是可以被理解到的，但这是就比如正念的一块，但是呢除非是像见过本性的人，他们能够很清楚明白心是怎么运作的，能够不再做区分，不再像我们时时刻刻的在区分这一个那个你和我，一般的人而言只是能够智力了解，并不能够清清楚楚知道心的运作。
Sometimes consciousness is described as the awareness of awareness. So you can see things, hear things, and you can be, you know that you're aware. Now, people often hear that and they say, awareness of awareness. Well, how about, if I'm aware that I'm aware, can I be aware that I'm aware that I'm aware? And aware and aware and aware? Does that end? Well, one of the things that's an answer to that concern, of course, someone who's proceeding along that line of thought is really getting caught up in concepts. The awareness, the single-pointed awareness is really all you need. And and understanding the importance of not getting caught up in what you are aware of, that's paramount.
当然有些人会说，你现在讲的是我要能够意识到我正在能够觉察到一些东西，那么我能不能再加一层说，我正在意识到我的意识正在意识到一些东西被意识到，这样无限的循环下去啊、那么对于这种人的想法呢，我会说他是在被他被概念所困住了，我们要非常小心不要被概念所困住。
So we can know when we are angry, we can know when we're sad or happy, we can see these feelings, we can experience these feelings arising in our mind, but we can learn not to get caught up in them.
所以呢，我们可以觉察到，很清楚地觉察到开心的感觉或者伤心的感觉，但是呢，我们不一定就是要被这些感觉所牵着走，被困在这些感觉当中。
So in working in the Chan school, of course, Chan methods such as Hua Tou, silent illumination, are directly enabling the mind, pointing the mind to see and experience the world consciously without getting caught and attached to all the things that arise in the mind.So the Chan school, of course, not only talks about these concepts, but there are methods which actually will help you arrive at that understanding.
对于禅来说呢，它不仅仅是一些概念上的东西，它更多的是一些方法，比如说默照、话头，都是一些方法来能够帮助你，能够在体验自己心念的过程当中呢，又不执着于自己所体验到的那些对象。
Now, the idea that we are aware of some things and not of other things led me in an interesting discussion as I was exploring this topic. It's one thing to look at Western psychology and therapies that help an unhappy mind.But there's also a branch of Western science that looks at the mind as a natural phenomenon, just the way that science investigates, studies, researches rocks, planets, our bodies, the biology that makes our bodies function. There is a branch of Western neuroscience, I'm sure this is also studied in the East, that is looking at the wayconsciousness works from scientifically observable standpoints.
当然了，我刚刚在讲到一些精神学派在研究心的一种方法以外呢，还有一派科学家呢是把这种心当作自然科学来研究，自然科学对象来研究，就像他们研究石头研究其他物理现象一样的，在研究心的作用和过程。
So let me explain why I'm now slightly moving the talk from an abstract, if you will, discussion of consciousness to more observable facts in a Western scientific manner. There's a number of reasons. One, these are stories and narratives, anecdotes, which are very, very...easy to understand, very comprehensible and arresting. So they show and they verify and authenticate a lot of what Buddhism looks at. And I think many people know about how scientists, astrophysicists, and regular physicists studying subatomic particles have come up with observations that often correlate with Buddha Dharma. So I'm doing it in that spirit. Also, I think that sometimes in talking about topics like this, it gets very, very abstract. And I'm always interested in getting people interested in Buddha Dharma and showing that it's operative in all sorts of modes of life. It's not just this...not simply a religious function, it's not just some sectarian viewpoint, that it is really universally applicable.
接下来呢，我会讲到的是另一组科学家把心当作一个 自然现象、科学现象来研究，然后会举几个例子。我之所以想从前面的精神分析学派转化到这一组自然科学家的实验当中来呢，就是因为我总是试图使禅这个话题、佛教这个话题让一般人都会感到非常有兴趣，并且呢这不仅仅只是一个宗教方面的一个理论，它也是可以跟自然科学进行对话和沟通，并且一些物理学家对一些亚原子研究从某些方面已经证实了一些佛教的一些理论。
So all of these anecdotes that I'm about to talk about, they're not really just anecdotes, these are scientific studies, all are in the spirit of observing the unconscious mind. And once again, we perhaps might not make that distinction, but for ordinary people, for most of us, we often have behavior patterns that we're not aware of. We often do things for reasons that we don't really understand, and we're influenced from advertising, from social groups, from a number of different domains. We're influenced in ways that we're hardly aware of.
当然我下面讲到的几个例子呢都是一些科学研究当然这些科学研究主要是针对潜意识来进行，对一些就是对我们的行为产生影响而且我们自己都觉察不到的一些因素来进行分析。当然从佛教角度来说我们并不做这种区分，但是在科学家研究的时候他们还是会有这种区分。
So, a University of Wisconsin study at a call center.People called various people around the country, around the United States. And the callers had information about the weather in the various locations they were calling. So they knew if they were calling someone in Seattle or in New Orleans or in Atlanta, they knew whether it was raining or it was sunny out. So they would call upan individual at random, they would know what the weather is, and they would ask them a very simple but blunt question. Are you satisfied with your life? And what happened is that according to the weather in the places where they were calling, there was a statistically observable correlation between the weatherand what their response was. So when it was raining, people tended to say, well, you know, my life is not really that great. It's really not quite what I hoped. On a sunny day, there was more of a tendency to say, well, yeah, my life's okay. No real problems.
所以呢第一个讲到的一个小故事是威斯康星大学做了这样一个实验。这个实验呢很简单，就是说他的研究者呢会给全美各地人打电话，首先呢他们在打电话之前已经知道那个被打电话的接电话的人那个地方的天气是如何的，比如说西雅图啊可能在下雨啊或新奥尔良天气很好，他们已经知道接电话那个人所在地方的天气他们已经有这个信息。然后他们打电话的时候呢就问一个非常简单的问题，就说你现在过怎么样，你对你的生活满意吗？很有意思的是凡是接电话的所有接电话的人的回答跟那个地方的人的天气有统计上能够看得出是有相关的。凡是天气不太好或者经常下雨正在下雨的那个地方的人的回答通常就会说不是很好呀，跟我想象的生活最理想的生活还是有差距啊。然后接电话，如果是接电话的人的地方天气比较好，出太阳，天气比较好的话呢，他们的回答一般都是比较正面的，会说啊，大部分还是满意的，对自己生活。
Then there was a second round of calls, also random people, different parts of the country. With this weather map at hand. They asked the same question, are you satisfied with your life? But it was preceded by another question. And that question was, What's the weather like where you are? So they would ask this question to people, what's the weather like? And people would look, yeah, it's sunny. Oh, it's really coming down right now. Whatever it was. And then they correlated all these answers. And then what happened, what they found, is that the answers, this correlation between the weather and the answer was statistically nullified. It disappeared, right? So this is an example of kind of very everyday, ordinary, understandable, a kind of enforced mindfulness. The state of mind that of the person being called was brought to their attention. Once it was brought to their attention, it no longer figured it into how they would answer the question.
然后刚刚说到是第一组实验，第二组实验呢，还是研究者给美国各地比较各地打电话。然后但是这一次有所不同的是在直接问他们你对生活是否满意之前呢，他们会先问一下你这个地方天气怎么样呀，然后接电话的人会先看一下那方面自己当地天气，会说哦竟然出差一样，或者说哦快要下雨了，然后呢再回答第二个问题，就是你对生活是否满意。然后令人惊讶的是当研究者问了两个问题之后，就是首先问了关于天气的问题之后，他们发现结果天气和他们回答的答案之间就不再存在统计学上有意义的联系了。所以也很有趣的就是说，在第一组实验当中，由于没有问题，没有先提问天气，所以他还是留在人的潜意识层面，他可以不自觉的影响接电话人的回答答案。而由于第二组实验的人，由于他们已经把这种潜意识对天气的反应带到了意识层面，他就无法或者没有在统计学上有意义的影响第二个回答了。
Another study of marriage patterns. The scientists looked at the last names of an array of people over a 5 or 10 year period who got married. They knew the maiden name and the married name. And there was a remarkable correlation in that people with the name Smith tend to marry people with the name Smith. People with the name Brown tend to marry people with the name Brown. I don't know how this translates into China with 100 names, but this was really, really quite interesting. People, you know, I doubt people get together and say, my name is Smith, your name is Smith, I love you. I don't think it quite works like that. But once again, this is the working of the unconscious mind, that people tend to like what is familiar to them.
还有一组实验挺有意思的是，有一些研究者对于结婚5到10年的人群呢进行研究，会发现呢，在因为美国人是要改姓的，在结婚以后是要改姓的，那么他们会发现，在他们结婚前的姓氏当中，相同姓氏的人似乎出现频率很高，也就是比如说同样姓史密斯的人会跟另外一个姓史密斯的人结婚，一个姓 Brown 的人会跟另外一个姓 Brown 的人结婚。
Okay, now here's something that everyone can participate in. I'm going to say a list of words. I'll say the word in English, Min will say it in Chinese, and it's a list of about 10, 15 words. I want everyone to listen very carefully. Okay?
下面呢，我们也要做一组实验。Harry 会用英语讲我，然后我会用中文讲。然后大家请仔细的听好。
Okay. Candy.
首先是糖果。
Sour.
酸的。
Sugar.
糖。
Bitter.
苦的。
Good.
好的。
Taste.
尝品尝。
Tooth.
牙齿。
Nice.
很好。
Honey.
蜂蜜。
Soda.
汽水。
Chocolate.
巧克力。
Heart.
Heart cake.
Heart.
Just heart?
Just heart.
Okay, 心，一个心的形状，心脏形状。
Cake.
然后蛋糕。
Eat.
吃
Pie.
美国人甜点那种就叫 pie.
Okay. All right, everyone heard that list. Now, I'm gonna say a couple words. Now, you have to see if the words that I say now, you can could raise your hands if you like, and if the word that I repeat now was on the list, you can raise your hand. Okay.
接下来呢，我要再说几个单词。如果你认为我接下来说的单词当中有一个单词是我刚刚在讲的一串单词当中的一个呢，请举手。
Okay, taste.
品尝。
Okay.
请举手。如果你听到品尝是刚刚报的一串单词当中的一个。
Point. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. First is taste.
第一个是品尝，请大家举手，如果听到的话。
Okay. Point.
第二个是指出或者点。
Okay.
大家有没有听到
？Okay, everyone. Sweet.
第三个是甜，大家有没有听到
？Okay. All right. So this is what's so interesting, right? So, everyone who said taste, you were absolutely right.
结果答案公布一下是这样子的，第一组单词当中我的确讲到了品尝这个单词，所以你们举手的是正确的。
Now, nobody got suckered into point, right? That was not on the list.
然后第二个单词我说的是有没有提到点或者指出，他说没有人举手，大家也是正确的。
But lots of people fell for the last word, sweet.
但是对于第三个单词有人上当了，就是我说甜这个词的时候有人举手。
Sweet was not on the list.
因为甜并没有在刚刚我第一次报的一连串的单词当中。
So why did so many people think it was? Well, the reason is there were things like sugar and candy and honey and soda and chocolate, a whole host of things which are indeed sweet, but the word sweet wasn't on the list.
那为什么有些人会上当，会认为刚刚我报了一串单词当中包括了甜这个字呢？因为我刚刚在报的一连串的单词当中，我提到有糖啊，有汽水啊，有巧克力啊，有蛋糕啊，还有派啊。
So it's really interesting. Are we now? So many people heard things that simply didn't exist. It was produced by the mind. Now it's not.Unreasonable, all of those things really were sweet, right? And the mind tends to work in categories, in pairs, in associations, right? But does that tendency of the mind always keep us in reality as it is?
那么为什么有人会上当，就是说认为甜也在这个一连串单词上呢？其实是很正常，对不对？因为我们的大脑在处理信息，我们的心在记录这些信息的过程当中，它肯定会把它归类，会把它配对啊，归类啊，一起记忆。所以应该说是很理性的一个，也就是说你的大脑是一个很正常的一个自动连接。但是你可以看出这种自动连接并不意味着你的心念会最准确的反映出现实。
Okay, there, you know, one could go on for many hours with examples like this. The psychological literature is filled with these things. One last one. There's something that Western psychologists have identified as flawed self-awareness. And if that doesn't sound like a Buddhist term, I don't know what does, but that's a Western term.
当然如果我们一直做实验的话，我们可以做很多实验，心理学家有很多这样类似的实验。但是我要提出的是有一组科学家做的实验是他们是叫做对于自我的一种缺陷性的一种了解，就是说对自我的认识是不准确的。
So a group of engineers were asked to rate themselves how they saw themselves in the field.Right. So 40% of these engineers said that they believe they were in the top 5% of engineers. So try and work with those numbers.
所以这种实验是这样子的。有一群工程师呢被问到他们是如何看待自己在自己领域当中的排行的。然后 大约有 40% 以上的人说呢，他们应该是在最顶尖的 5% 的人群当中。
A group of doctors was asked about their diagnosis of people with pneumonia. 88% that said that they had made that diagnosis and they were correct. It turned out when there were follow-up, only 20% of the diagnoses had been correct.
然后还有一组呢是医生被问到你对这个肺炎的诊断是否正确？有 88% 的医生认为他们对肺炎的诊断是正确的，而实际上呢，当我们进一步调查的时候，发现其实只有20%的诊断是正确的。
So in Buddhism, we talk about no self. It's seemingly a very esoteric topic to understand misperception of self. But as you can see in some of these examples, in many of these examples, it's not necessarily so.Esoteric, at least on a certain level, that we have images of ourselves, and the images of themselves, who we think we are, right? And it, you know, we know that we might be parents, we might be children, we might be friends, we might be workers. We have these identities. We often exaggerate some and repress others because of.Various causes and conditions.
对，所以刚刚的实验就让我们了解到，其实很多时候是可以，我们可以用很具体的东西来看到我们对自己的观念，对自己这个观念是经常会有一些误差的，是有一些错解的。所以佛教在讲到无我的时候，好像听上去很抽象或者是很神秘，但是实际上可以用这种很简单的例子来。体验到之间的意思。
So, we've been talking about consciousness, unconsciousness, self-view, various tendencies we have, some just touching upon how the mind works. Now, the question is, what is the point? Where does this lead us? And to my mind, where this leads us is to practice, is to self-investigation. So, For the rest of the talk, what I'd like to do is discuss a short passage from the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment. And the reason I'm bringing this passage up is because it gives what I think is a very, very clear view of how the mind works and how it can be approached. And it's inclusive, I mean, I'm using these terms somewhat loosely, but...inclusive of both conscious and unconscious, to the extent that you can talk about the unconscious from a Buddha Dharma point of view, which many teachers do in terms of the seventh and eighth consciousness. So I will get to that passage in a moment.
刚刚我们讲了很多科学家做实验啊，对于心和潜意识的理解呀，那么这些对我们有什么帮助呢？到底把我们指向什么方向呢？我想说的是，对于这些科学实验的了解，只是加强了我们的一个信念，就是我们要修行。我想，我会引用《圆觉经》上的一段经文来讲到，来提到心是怎么运作的，以及我们可以怎样的去了解心的运作。
Okay, I'll just read the passage and then go over it. This is, In the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment, it's divided into chapters devoted to various bodhisattvas. So this is a discussion with the bodhisattva of perfect wisdom. So the Buddha says, Virtuous man, all bodhisattvas and sentient beings in the Dharma ending age should at no time give rise to deluded thoughts. Yet, when their deluded minds arise, they should not extinguish them.In the midst of deluded thinking, they should not add discrimination. Amidst non-discrimination, they should not distinguish true reality. If sentient beings upon hearing this Dharma method believe in, understand, accept, uphold it, and do not generate alarm and fear, they are in accordance with the nature of enlightenment.
然后这一段经文是来自于圆觉经的。圆觉经当中它的很多章节是根据不同的大菩萨来回应的。然后这一段回应的应该是文殊菩萨对文殊菩萨的回应。我先把经文念一下然后再来讲解。善男子，但诸菩萨即末世众生居一切时不起妄念，与诸妄心亦不熄灭，诸妄想境不加了之，与无了之不变真实，彼诸众生闻是法门，信解受持，不生敬畏，是则名为随顺觉性。
Okay, so first, virtuous man, all bodhisattvas and sentient beings in the Dharma ending age should at no time give rise to deluded thoughts. I don't think anyone has a problem with that one. It sounds like Buddhism 101. We sit, we use our methods, whether it's counting breath, huato, silent illumination. We are trying to use our methods sincerely, efficiently, with equanimity. So we certainly are not trying to have deluded thoughts, to have our minds wander.
第一句话是说在末法时代的诸菩萨和众生应该不要尽量的不要升起妄念或者升起妄念。我想这句话应该是比较容易理解的，因为这是佛法的基础，就是说到我们会用方法，用各种数息啊、默照啊、话头啊，把自己的心安住在方法上，所以不会把心安住在妄念上。
Yet when their deluded minds arise, they should not extinguish them. Okay, so the first half of that sentence, once again, really no problem. People who have sat, meditated, tried to use a method, they know it ain't easy. You no matter how sincere you are, how much effort, the mind, like one Japanese master said, just the way the stomach turns out gastric juices, the mind turns out thoughts. The deluded mind will arise.
但是凡是大家在这边打坐过的人都知道，不管你的意图是多么的好，你不想关注在这个妄念上，但正如畏总是会产生畏之一样，我们的心就是会产生妄念。所以第二句话讲到，当你的妄念起来的时候，你不应该想要去把它熄灭掉。
But then the next half of that sentence, after yet when their deluded minds arise, they should not extinguish them. And I say, now wait a second. That doesn't sound right to me. You know, when the deluded mind arises, you know, the understanding has always been is stomp on that sucker, right? I don't want a deluded mind. I want enlightenment. I want to be pure. I want to have a mind free from thoughts. I don't want to have anything to do with the deluded mind. As soon as I see it, I'm going to crush it.
但是讲到第二句话的后半段的时候，我就有疑问了。哎，好像不太对劲呀。他讲到妄念起来的时候，也不应该去把它熄灭。那难道我们不是就是要处理掉妄念吗？我希望我的心是非常纯净的，没有一丝的妄念，所以。看到妄念出来的时候，赶快把它灭掉。
So, don't extinguish a deluded mind. It seems really bizarre. Why would it say that? When you sit, well, first of all, there is reality. The deluded mind arises, but it doesn't seem to be the way we've been taught. We don't want this deluded mind. Note very carefully. It doesn't say, it already said don't give rise to deluded thoughts, right? So the sutra is definitely telling you not to do this deliberately, but they do arise. The deluded mind does arise. So how are you going to view that? Now this is key. This is the key to practice, right? So every meditation teacher, I think, that has ever existed, I could be wrong since I don't know every meditation teacher, but it seems to be across the field, people will say, when you get off your method, whether you're counting your breath, whether you're doing Watto, whether you're doing silent illumination, simply go back to the method. Everyone tells you that, right? But nobody does it. Right? Nobody does that purely, right? Because this is one of these things that's so subtle, it's like 100, 800 pound gorillas. There's some judgment in the mind when you recognize a deluded thought. There's some judgment, very, very, very subtle, of, oh, I'm not on my method now. Oh, this really shouldn't be here. I should go back to the method. Now, and of course, we often do. But there is that sense. There is that sense. And this is really the sense of self at its subtlest, right? Very, 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 very small, insinuating itself, almost like a whisper at the back of the mind. Okay, there's definitely something wrong here. I'm not doing my method right. I have to go back and do it. That's what we think. But this sutra, this passage, is helping you recognize that that's not the case. You are not really doing your method the way that you think you are. As the more diligent, the more effort that you put into this, the more you might get off the track, because you're saying, oh, most everyone has come to this realization, I'm really hopeless. I can't, my mind's wandering, what's the matter with me? Or, wow, I've been sitting here so clearly, I am just a totally wonderful meditator. Enlightenment must be just around the corner.
所以第二句话讲的，就是第二句话后半段讲到，如果有妄念起来的时候呢，也不要去把它灭掉。这句话听上去非常奇怪，因为正如第一句话所讲的，作为一个末世的修行者，我们不应该不应该升起妄念。但是其实他第一句话是讲不要，当然不要故意的去升起妄念，但是当你的妄念不自觉来的时候呢，这是第二句话所讲的，你也不要去把它消灭掉。为什么呢？这其实是一个修行的一个关键点。因为我知道所有的禅师呢都会讲到，在这种情况下你应该回到方法。但是这里边往往会有一个很微细的层面会被人们所忽略，那就是在你回到方法之前，你意识到你有妄念，然后你在你回到方法之前，你会有一些微细的念头产生，你会可能会想，哎呀，我怎么又产生妄念了？或者是会讲到，我要赶快回到方法呀，或者经常这些情况经常出现的时候，你可能会感到非常有挫败感，你会说，哎呀，我简直没有药救了，我怎么老是有这些妄念？或者如果你打坐感觉很好的时候呢，你又会产生这样的很微细念头，说，哎呀，我感觉实在太好了，我可能很快就要开悟了。问题在于一般人在回到方法之前所经历的，刚才我提到的这些维系的念头，他们是没有办法认识到这些维系的念头存在的。所以佛经的这个后半段话说，如果妄念产生的时候呢，也不要去想要去消灭它。这句话就是能够帮助你认识到在这些维系层面这些维系的念头。
And then,In the midst of deluded thinking, they should not add discrimination. So this is almost like the oldest joke in the book. It's like, I'm not discriminating. What are you talking about? I'm not excited. I'm calm. You're crazy. I mean, I'm doing the method absolutely perfectly. What are you talking about? So, yes, I am discriminating. No, I'm not calm, right? But what I am in that particular demonstration is I'm wrapped up in my sense of self. I want to portray myself as someone who's, a good practitioner and, who's really sincere. I don't want to look at the things that I don't want to look at. I don't want to look at my discriminating mind.
然后接下去，第三句话讲到，在这种妄念的想，在妄念之中，就是你意识到自己妄念已经升起了，但是回到方法之前的一系列微细的妄念当中呢，你不应该加以区分，不应该加以歧视，或者说这个是好，那个是不好，因为 你越是很用力的想要消灭这些妄念的时候，往往你也是在背道而驰。
And it says amidst non-discrimination, they should not distinguish true reality. And this is even moving to an even finer point, right? Of distinguishing true reality is once again another discrimination, right? Looking for this. The sutra is telling us to keep an utterly open, unattached mind. The method, used absolutely purely, understanding that using the method absolutely purely means also using the method impurely. That when thoughts come up and all these things that happen, it doesn't mean that it's not proper. It doesn't mean that you're making a mistake. The only mistake, in quotes, that you could do is to disavow that, is to ignore it, is to react against it. So in using the method, the method with almost all of our methods is an open mind, an aware mind, but a non-reactive mind.
所以接下去佛经讲了更深一层面的一种新的状态。他说，在这种不要去区分在妄念升起首先你就是不要区分妄念，不要说妄念是好还是不好，不要去做判断。在这种不判断不区分的状态下呢，你也不要去说什么是真实什么是虚假，就是不要再进行很更微细层面的一种判断。这样的话，你的整个心都是保持在一种开放的不执着的纯净的状态，你的心并不对心当中产生的现象做出反应。所以你的心，虽然你的心中的现象各种各样妄念可能是不纯净的，你的心始终没有执着于这种不纯净的对象，而你的心始终是纯净的。
And so finally, this passage says, so if sentient beings upon hearing this Dharma method believe in, understand, accept, uphold it, and do not generate alarm and fear, they are in accordance with the nature of enlightenment. So to me, in being in accordance with the nature of enlightenment means having a truly open mind, not shying away from this teaching, as it says, if people might generate alarm and fear. It says this also in the Diamond Sutra, but really embrace the underlying understanding that really says to us that our conscious, our unconscious, our minds are available to us in approach. Doesn't mean we can will this, but we can approach things and practice in an even-handed, sincere, equanimous manner. And just doing that, it's pretty much what Dogen Zenji says, practice is enlightenment. Opening ourselves up and observing the conscious, unconscious mind, not making these distinctions, this is true practice.
然后佛经的最后一句话讲到，如果众生听到这一个方法，能够确确实实相信它、理解它、接受它，并且能够信守它，并且并在同时并不感到害怕或惊恐，那么他们如实去修行的话，就真正的是在一种开悟的状态当中，是一种随顺的觉性，在觉性当中。所以对我而言呢，就是说回到洞山良间禅师所说的修行，就是一种开放的心态，并不执着于任何东西，那么这种修行才是真修行。
And lastly, this is could be seen as a very esoteric, subtle passage having to deal with advanced practice. But I don't see it that way. I see this as having very, very practical implications. So let's just say that I think anyone can relate to some of these scenarios. You've taken an exam. You were really trying to pass the bar exam or a graduate exam, and you didn't pass, or you didn't get as high a mark as you would have liked. Now, some people can really be thrown off by this and say, well, I really, I studied, I didn't make it. So obviously there's something wrong with me. I'm really a worthless human being. I didn't make this. Everything's hopeless and no one's going to like me. These things happen. I mean, you can tweak this story in any different ways. And in the same token, someone can get a promotion or win an award and think that they're the best thing since sliced bread. But in understanding this passage, what happens? So if you feel those feelings of depression or happiness, you don't deny them. You don't say, oh well, no, I can't stand feeling this way. I have to put this out of my mind, which really means to repress it and not deal with it. No, you can experience it. This is the deluded mind arising, and it says, don't extinguish it. It says that in the sutra. But it doesn't say embrace it, doesn't mean don't create further deluded thoughts. And Thich Nhat Hanh even goes further with this kind of a thing. So if anger, hatred, all of these really negative, unpleasant thoughts arise in the mind, he will say, you recognize it, and you also say to the thought, I recognize you. I recognize you, anger. I recognize you, hatred. I realize that you are part of me, and I will take care of you. I will love you. I will soothe your wounds, so to speak. And this too can be very liberating, in the sense that in any moment what's arising in our minds, we can drop the expectation of what should be happening and really look very openly and clearly at what actually is happening.
所以呢，我刚刚引用这段经文，有人认为是在修行的高级阶段才用得上的，但是我却觉得，它其实有非常实际的意义。比如说，举个例子，大家都经历过考试，有可能，比如说你有相同的经历，比如说考试没有通过呀，或者没有取得你所希望的高分啊，那个时候你会非常沮丧，你会说，哎呀，没有希望了，大家都不喜欢我，这是一种情况。好，另一种情况也可能是相反的，你考试的考得很好啊，或者得奖啦，升职啦，各种让你非常开心的情况。那么在这两种情况当中呢，当你的情绪起来的时候，当你或者是悲伤或者是开心的情绪起来的时候呢，你不用去压抑它，你不用去说，哎呀，我不应该这样，不应该那样，你就可以很平静的就接受它，承认这种情绪的存在，但是呢不要进一步的让它扩大，就是也不用，但是在同时也不要用期望来压制它。
So this has been a short talk. I had to cover a number of topics and aspects, butOne very important thing, and I mentioned very briefly Yogacara and the schema of the mind, the eight consciousness. But one very important, our thinking consciousness, the way we interact with the world, in Yogacara classification, it's indeterminate. That means it can be wholesome, it can be unwholesome, it can be neutral. And the good news about this is that the way we think can be transformed.We can really train our minds, and we don't have to be sucked down by suffering. And so what we really have to do is to practice, look deeply into our minds, and be happy.
今天我今天我讲座呢也是比较简短的一个讲座，当中呢很简短的涉及到了唯识学的一些内容，然后唯识学讲到我们的心的各种心理的各种现象呢，可以是正面的，可以是负面，也可以是中性的，都是取决于我们心的一种态度。所以说好消息是我们可以训练自己的心，是一种可以修行的。好，今天我讲座就到此，谢谢大家。
Okay, thatconcludes the talk. If anyone has any questions, I guess there's a little bit of time.
今天我讲座就到此，如果大家还有问题的话可以问我。
Otherwise, well, thank you so much for coming, and we'll meet again.
好，非常感谢大家，好，下次再见。